Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Feature. I'm your host, Tom Mazure, on the road and on location south of Ludington in the historic White Pine Village. It was established in 1976 from the Mason County Historical Society Artifacts and Buildings. The village reproduces the mid-1800s forward when a logging camp was established here between the Pierre Marquette Lake and Lake Michigan. Our tour guide is the Mason County Historic Society Executive Director, Rebecca Beringer. We are told that the Mason County Historical Society is the third largest of its kind in the state and a benchmark for many other similar venues. Please sit back and enjoy this wonderful tour. But first, let's have a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you for the opportunity to see our past and how it helps us understand our present and our future. Be with our listeners as they enjoy this broadcast and reflect upon their lives and the heritage that they will leave behind. In Jesus' name, amen.
Okay, well, we've had a wonderful time here. Where are we going next?
Yeah, so we're going to go to, we're actually going to go up here to the general store.
And you know, listeners, we're actually giving an abbreviated tour, which we missed the print shop, but we can't be right. Can't go see everything.
Yeah, we have 30 buildings here, so there's lots to see. So, but this would be the Kohl's General Store. This would be, you know, a version of a big box store back in the day.
All right.
You know, you come into the store, it's a beautiful log cabin, wood floors. And this is, you know, basically a mercantile. This is where you came and you got pretty much anything that you needed that they could have. So you would come here, you would buy fabric to or buttons to do sewing. You would buy different types of material, but you could also buy food. You could buy, we have cabbage slicers hanging on the wall because, you know, if you needed to do that, if you couldn't build it, you could come here and buy that. You could buy different canned goods, oil lamps, spinning wheels. And this would be where people in the community would bring their produce in to the store to be sold to the store so they could sell it, you know, especially as the community grew and you started to have
specialization.
Towns. Yeah, and so you, not everybody had their own homestead where they grew their food, you know, at a certain point in time by the 1890s. And so this would have been a great place for people to come. And these were also a gathering space, you know. That's why you see a little table over here, you know, with a game board on it and so where people could sit around, because people would come to the general store and again, it built a sense of community. It
probably was between store. Services at the church.
Yeah.
They yes. would come to the country store.
Exactly. They'd come to the country store. And so lots of things to see and hear, really great exhibit. And as with all things of this era, the heat source was a wood stove, you know, so this would have been a year-round operation that they would have had to have heated. And then when you look at like the pie cupboard over here, obviously screen, because in the summer you would have opened the windows and you would have been dealing with flies. And so you have screen, you know, cupboards here to sort of keep air in the pie cupboard where the bread would be, but you don't want the bugs in there.
And so, what I assumed is that some of the ladies would cook their stuff. They would bring it, maybe sell it on consignment or sell it to the store, and then everybody would come here and do it.
And that really would have been almost a daily thing because you didn't have refrigeration back then. So you didn't have ways to store, you know, something to keep it for longevity, or even when I say longevity, you know, 4 or 5 days. So, you know, this would almost be something that they would do daily. They would bring pies down or breads to sell. And when you think about you know, food, you know, we have the 2000 calories, you know, sort of the recommended time frame. Back in this era, it was closer to 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day that needed to be consumed because of the work that they did. It was so much more strenuous. So bread was really a big part of the diet back then in order to provide the calories that you needed to.
They were worried about getting enough calories.
Exactly.
We're worried about having too many calories.
Exactly. Yes.
The last thing, the chimney is in the center. The advantage of that is that heat radiates
correct.
to the whole building,
right?
Where some of the later on they put them on the exterior, but on the interior you actually capture more of that
exactly
heat.
Yep, it was a way to heat the building. You had radiant heat.
Oh yes, that's the definition of it. We're on the porch here.
Yeah.
And so what era, what time after we saw the Trappers, how many years between the Trappers and the general store?
So the Trappers cabin would have been the 1840s courthouse, late 1840s, and as you get into the general store, it's really that 1860s to early 1900s that you had a general store.
60 years later.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. So we're walking up here to, we have a couple different two buildings up here that represent some important, I guess, infrastructure for the community. One would be the fire barn. Mm-hmm. Now this is an era, what you're going to see in here is definitely in the motor vehicle era, but you have to remember, you know, before that it was all horse-drawn fire, and so we have an exhibit in here because there was a significant fire in Ludington that burned a significant part of the community, and they
just the risk of the era. Everything was wood,
everything
was dried.
Yes, everything was dried, everything was wood. Things were built very close together. It didn't take much for a spark to jump, you know, or a flame to jump from one building to the next. You didn't have, you know, city or county water sources, you know, so it literally was by bucket, you know, to be able, you know, bucket brigade or whatever, to really be able to get the fires out. And so after that, you know, we've had, you know, a couple fires in the area, but the community, you know, many of the people you see on the pictures over there of the became part of a fire department. And that fire department went from a horse-drawn era where they would take just a tank, they'd fill a water tank, to actual having a fire truck, you know, that could, you know, have a little more capacity and get people quicker, you know, to the actual fire and stuff.
So. It was one of the most important parts of the community was this fire prevention and
yes.
fire extinguishing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let me guess, I assume the shingles on the roof were probably wood too.
They were, yes,
so
they were.
So you have fly ash that's coming from either the lumber mill while they're boilers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or from your neighbor's house, or
exactly.
What about your own house?
Own house, yeah.
And then there's the old-fashioned chimney fire,
right?
Which everybody was susceptible to.
Everybody was susceptible to. And Ludington had a pretty big fire on June 11th, 1881, that burned several city blocks in the Ludington area. Did a significant amount of damage to the area, and so you know, it's tragedies like that that. You know, again, people relied on God more and leaned on Him, and then found ways to take care of each other, to build better infrastructure for their community. And part of that infrastructure was putting together fire departments where people joined. You know,
it was almost an honor to be part of the fire.
It was an honor, and still in a lot of ways today, it's considered an honor to be a part of the fire department. And so it's a way to look out for your community and a way to. To be there to help when tragedy strikes is to have that type of infrastructure in place. And so
I see a switchboard. What is the switchboard doing in the fire barn?
Well, there was a time, you know, where sometimes we just didn't have places for things. And so that would have been one, and that would sort of, you know, talked about how you would have dispatched in a certain time and age, which would have been sort of the community phone lines.
There you go.
So we're going to go to the blacksmith shop.
Okay. Well, always a lot of fun. This
yes.
is a very important, not only in the sawmill, but in town.
In town,
it's pretty important.
Very important. Every community had a blacksmith. You know, this would be a place where you would come. Obviously, they made horseshoes, very common. But they would also make a lot of other. They would make some, you know, kitchen utensils, spoons, you know, different types of stuff for your harnesses.
So I'm going to grab up something. I'm going to get, you got these all nailed down.
Yeah.
I got to come up to the anvil. I'm probably not allowed to do this, but.
Yep. That's a sound you would hear commonly. And this is a working blacksmith shop. So we have some blacksmiths every now and then that will come out and they'll work the blacksmith shop and work the forge so that people can sort of see how the iron is heated up and twisted and turned to create the different pieces that you would need, you know.
It's harder than you think. I've tried to do it.
It's very hard, and you actually, there's a picture here of Abe Nelson.
Okay.
He was one of our well-known blacksmiths from the area. A lot of the things that you see in this building, as well as another one, are tools that he donated from his collection. But it was hard work. You know, not only, you don't often think, but you were just pounding on the anvil, that reverberation up your arm and down your spine, you know, was hard. So a lot of people had issues with their backs. They were also bent over all the time.
Poor,
you know,
position.
Poor position. And then the smoke, you know, the inhalation of the smoke. So, and we have a building over here that actually is in the middle of being renovated. And so this is the Rose Holly Museum. And this particular building was at one point in time, it was the admissions center for the village. This is where you started.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 70s, and you entered through the back. This building, like I said, we're renovating it. It's housed a lot of our collection over the last several years, but we've just moved that downtown. So we have a plan for this going forward. Rose Holly was one of the board members and executives for the museum back in the 50s and 60s. And so she, this is sort of building is in honor of her, and she had the Rose Holly Museum. She was really a driving force for the Historical Society during a time frame that, you know, sort of took it from the beginning of its era and transitioned it towards where it is today.
You know, and we need those people, and when we were over at Hart, depending on which order our listeners listen to this
right.
in the archives, those people did very, very important mm-hmm. Contributions, having that vision.
Yes, the vision is so important. So.
And then working the vision.
Working the vision, yeah. And something sort of unique about the Historical Society here is we're called Mason County Historical Society, but we are completely donor and member supported.
Wow.
So we don't get any county funding, no state taxes or anything like that. So.
And there is an admission fee, but I tell you, listeners, when people do this work for us, they're actually they're the curators of this for us. And I've learned that when somebody does something good for us, you need to reward that and support them. So don't begrudge when you see something like this and realize they aren't being subsidized by our tax dollars.
Right.
They're doing this totally on their, they're like a faith ministry. You are
we
a faith
are.
Minister.
Yeah, we are in a lot of ways.
In a secular way, yeah, but you're faith. It's in faith you put this together, and just trust that somebody will support you.
Yes, yeah. When we've been very blessed to have the support that we have from the community, from those who come and visit and enjoy the museums. And so we're thankful for that, very thankful. We're in what's called the Artisan Building.
Okay.
So this is a building where we have different artisan demonstrations. So what we're looking at are multiple over here sort of in front of us.
First of all, the building is about 20 feet wide. I forgot to mention that about the general store is about 30 by 30. The Trapper's Cabin was, you know, about 10 by 10 roughly, or maybe 12 by 12. We're seeing the buildings get larger. Is there history behind this artisan building?
So there's not a ton of history behind the building itself, but it was built to sort of house several important pieces from our collection. And those pieces would largely be, you know, a lot to do with textile exhibits. So you're looking at several different types of looms that we have here. These looms are dressed. So, you know, you're walking around, you're looking at them. They're making anything from rugs to maybe placemats or, you know, maybe a mug rug, they would call them, table runners, things like that they would have used, hot pads. And we have several volunteers that come out and operate these, especially for on our History in Action days. So youth can really see, you know, your clothes back then, things like that didn't just come from the store. You know, you actually had to buy the fabric, you know, or weave. We have some spinning wheels over here where you would spin the wool up before you could use it to turn it into anything. And so it's really good for our youth to be able to see that. We have different blankets and quilts hanging on the wall. And we actually have a little quilting sort of youth station over here where kids can come and design a quilt block and get the, you know, the feel for how that would be. They can sit down at a treadle sewing machine and push the
fabric. My grandmother had one of those.
Yes, exactly.
We actually have it at our house.
Do you?
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
It's a singer.
A singer, yes. They're a great piece of history. And so every Tuesday, we have what we call Artisan Tuesdays, where volunteers are in here working the looms and the spinning wheels and doing demonstrations. We actually have crafts that kids can do where they can actually do the tin punch ornaments and things like that. Because again, you had to make a lot of the things, even your Christmas gifts. I mean, this is September, barely September, but people would have been thinking about, you know, if you had a birthday in November, you had to think about that now because you had to make that. You know, maybe you were going to make a pair of suspenders for your son to hold their drawers up, or you were going to make a nightgown or something. You had to be thinking about those things well in advance.
So you know? That wouldn't be like me going out on Christmas Eve day and and being there as Myers says, shoppers, you have 10 more minutes. We're closing.
Yes, very little last minute gift giving in this day and age. I mean, even sometimes they even had to dye their own fabric, you know, for the colors
that they would days, make. Weeks,
it takes days, yeah. And there's a whole process to that. So a lot of forethought and a lot of planning went into life, much greater, I think, in a lot of ways than what we do today.
You worked around the seasons. If you were trapping, if you were maple syruping, you had 3 to 5 weeks to do this. Mm-hmm. If you missed it, you didn't have maple syrup.
You didn't have maple syrup. It sort of goes to that, you know, make hay when you can make hay.
And that's all right. And going back to the spinning mill, you know, that just amazes me how that fibers
yes.
can be transformed into string or thread,
right.
And then you build. Then you form that into larger pieces, and then like you have quilts,
yeah,
all this. And they didn't have to try to shop local. It was local.
Everything was local for the most part. So yeah, we're gonna step into the Abe Nelson Museum.
Oh, this is a treasure.
This is my husband's favorite, and most men love this museum.
This is where the testosterone really runs.
This is where it is. This is where manliness, you know.
That's, I like
really,
that term.
It's
wonderful. I described this building again. This one's 22, 24 feet wide, and it's, oh boy, it's about 40 feet, we'll call it 40 feet long. What is in here? We see little buildings. We see all kinds of shelves and workbenches.
Yeah.
That's my type of thing.
Yeah. So this is really a collection of all things sort of late 1800s related to types of stuff that a blacksmith would have worked on. Many of the things that you see here tool-wise are part of the Abe Nelson collection, and you can see photos of Abe Nelson here on the wall.
So who is Abe?
So Abe was a blacksmith, and he was
He was the guy that we had the picture of.
There's a picture up there in the blacksmith building. And
he gets two buildings.
He gets two buildings because he donated a lot of stuff. So he built a lot of things, worked in as a blacksmith his whole life, and was really loved by the community. He was just a wonderful person. But you see, you know, things, I mean, simple things that they would make. Cowbells would have been something so that you would know, you know, where the cow was at. Different, you know,
exactly. I couldn't resist.
I don't blame you. It adds to it. So types of screws that they would have used to drill, that would have been a hand crank drill that they would have done. You know, you see the different types of saws, crosscut saws, saw blades, even logos that he would have built, you know, for them, for different people. And you think, you know, a blacksmith worked with iron, but they also worked with wood because they had to be able to, you know, bend
composite.
That iron onto different types of pieces of lumber for your wagons, you know, if an axle broke or things along that line. So they really had a vast skill set to be able to really do the work that they did.
I'm looking at this one piece, and do you know what that is? It looks like it goes to a buggy.
It did. It went to the buggy. I don't know exactly what part on the buggy.
Some sort of connecting part. And what's interesting about, and this is an example of what you're talking about, Rebecca. We're talking with Rebecca. She's the executive director of the White Pine Village and here in Mason County, just south. It's on the Pierre Marquette on the peninsula between Lake Michigan and the Pierre Marquette River, south of the current city of Ludington. But what this particular piece is so interesting is that it's the composite, and you said they had to work in both wood and such. There's characteristics of wood, and there's characteristics of metal. Iron was a costly commodity. Wood was an inexpensive commodity. So you've got this composite. It's interesting. I was in manufacturing and so on and so forth. I taught classes in materials and processes. I love that subject. Taught it more than I ever taught anything else. But we went to this factory, and today a car is not just, you know, made out of steel. It's made out of 1920 different pieces of steel. It used to have a single piece of metal, the frame, that the chassis that it sat on. Now it's made, it's of wrapped metal, and they composite, and they look at that, and they put that together, and that's what they did, is they took metal and they took wood. We have other people who are visiting this museum in the background, but what else do we see in this?
You see the different ox yokes that were needed. You know, ox was, you know, a very stout animal that could move a lot of weight, and so that was a common animal that you would find on just about everybody's homestead. We do have some of these, you know, log little buildings, and that's just to sort of show you, that's a replica of maybe what a lumber camp building would have looked like. We also have some of the railroad lanterns, lights that would have been used because blacksmiths would have helped, you know, with the railroads. And then photos. You can see that amazing photo over there with the two horses pulling that giant load of lumber, huge logs, well above, you know, the height of this building that two horses would have pulled.
Like 25 plus feet tall.
Yes, exactly. And so, and then I always like to point out something that most, we do a little guessing game with people in this building.
I hear a quiz coming
up. Yeah, so now you can't read this, okay, but if you had to guess, what would this be?
Okay, it's a stool of some sort. Mm-hmm. It's actually in a reclined position. Uh-oh. I saw what it was.
Didn't you? So now you can tell your audience.
Let me tell the audience. Yeah. It's wood. It's about, it's a buckboard. Or it looks like it's made of a pine, maybe white pine. It's about 12 inches wide. It's about 14 inches high. And it's in a very much of a reclined position. My guess was, before I accidentally read what it was, I was going to say it was a dentist chair.
Yeah, not quite, but close. It was.
I have to be honest.
It was a barber chair. So you can see it sort of cut out at the top where they could lay their neck and they would get their hair cut.
So. Well, I don't think they want to do it too often. It doesn't look like a very comfortable. There's no padding at all.
No.
But there's, and right next to it is a picture. You have a big cauldron there. It looks like an iron cauldron. Just all kinds of stuff that is period. You have the horses. We talked about the one that with a stack of wood.
Right.
They had those contests. That was mostly for show, because there was a whole lot of work to do that.
Exactly.
But, and they would put up 30 plus, I think when I was at the Hart Museum, I counted it, 7 logs across, and it was, I mean, it was 45 plus logs.
Yeah.
But this one is totally different.
Yes.
That this one, they only had one log on the sleigh.
Yeah, one big log.
And then they have one big one, and the girth of that log looks all of 4 feet in diameter, and I'm probably being conservative. He
probably, correct,
And then next to it, he has they have another horse, a team, and they actually have three of them on that. Just amazing period. Yeah. Now, I'm looking at this. This is something that has something unique. Rebecca, what do you think that catches my attention? I'm quizzing you, but
you're quizzing me. Well, it's Oxford. The ox are there.
You got it. You got it. When was the last time you saw an ox?
I haven't seen an ox in a while here in Mason County.
Whatever happened to oxen? But oxen were horses were here. They were kind of utilitarian, but oxens were brute
force. Yes.
Brute force. They're bred for that strength.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not seen an oxen in a year. Do they even exist?
they do exist, but they're not here in the county. They're not used. I mean, that's a change in time where livestock back then were very much work animals, where today they're pets.
Yes.
You know, and so that's a big change.
They cost you money.
They cost you money. Yes, exactly. And the difference between an ox from a horse is all the power in a horse is in the back end. All the power in an ox is at the front end.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I came here to the White Pine Village to find out that the oxens physiologically have their strength in the front.
Front end, yes.
And that was more biblical, too.
Yeah.
Now, you have a wonderful display here, a diorama, which means it's just a display that gives an idea. What's interesting about this exhibit, it has a wooden rail to represent a metal rail, and it has the big wheels. Tell the people what the big wheel was.
The big wheel was a really
big wheels.
Big wheels was a way to move a lot of lumber and get it up off the ground and haul it.
So it had a high axle.
High axle.
When they were this is a representation, so I'm going to have to go from memory. But those things could be 16 feet high.
Oh, yeah, very high.
And so the middle shaft, the axle, was in the middle. That meant that you, if it was 16, half of that is you'd have a clearance of 8 feet. Yep. You could probably lift 6 feet of board. And I don't know if they crank it up or they would use winches. And then they would take that out of the woods.
Yep,
that's exactly. Just one thing. You've got the sled, a representative. Are those oxen or
those
horse?
Are, I think, oxen. This is a very old
exhibit.
Exhibit.
Who made this exhibit?
I don't know, but I think it was original, like back the beginning of this is probably at least 40 or 50 years old. So, yeah.
And then you have cranes.
Cranes, yeah. What would have been the version of a crane back in that day, moving the logs, to and from.
Loading up. Loading up the train cars, if it was on the short line, or if it's loading up these,
those
up there?
Right, exactly.
So it's really interesting, and what is depicted here, that it also has sled.
Yep, it had sled capability because it was winter time. Yep. And we think of cranes today as all metal. We don't think of it. I mean, these have wood, again, that sort of composite that,
what is available.
Exactly. So they were using wood, beams, I guess, basically to, with some metal components to move the log. So very different from what we think in our mind of a crane today.
And, I'm going to take a picture of this, listeners. So maybe you'll find this on one of our websites, this crane. I'm having a hard time describing it because it is so different. But it looks like an old-fashioned crane with a hoist in the pulleys and so on and so forth. But it has a hand crank.
Yes.
Yeah. Or they may have even used a pair of oxen
to turn
that.
Exactly.
They have a steam boiler engine one and such. Yeah. Just a wonderful, wonderful exhibit in this diorama.
You have been listening to a virtual tour of White Pine Village, just south of Ludington, Michigan. I'm your host, Tom Majeure. Until next time, bye now.